Delivering this week's must-watch workplace storylines, this is Bloomberg Law's Punching In, for those of you listening in Washington and across the globe.
Hey folks, thanks for punching in with us today. I'm Robert Iafola from Bloomberg Law's Labor and Employment News Team. This week, I'm joined by William Gould, a former chairman of the National Labor Relations Board and the Beardsley Professor of Law Emeritus at Stanford Law. Professor Gould is going to be talking about independent contractor classification. Thanks for joining us, Professor Gould.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
For the uninitiated listeners out there, could you talk a little bit about why employment classification is so important?
Yes. Well, it's terribly important because if you are not an employee, but rather an independent contractor, you're deprived of wage and hour legislation, which guarantees minimum wages, maximum hours, after which you're obliged to provide, employers obliged to provide overtime premiums, mm-hmm. Social Security legislation available to employees, not independent contractors, unemployment compensation, workers' compensation legislation for injury on the job, related to the job, anti-discrimination legislation, Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and other legislation protecting people against race, sex, religion, national origin discrimination, not available to, in the main, except for a couple of jurisdictions, to independent contractors. And then finally, the National Labor Relations Act and other related legislation of that kind, giving employees the right to affiliate with unions and to engage in the collective bargaining process, not available to independent contractors. And so you can see that the landscape here really promotes inequality to the extent that the individuals are regarded as independent contractors rather than employees.
Mm-hmm. So there's this whole panoply of protections that workers get that independent contractors don't get. Now, there's different classification tests under different laws. Is that
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct. Yes. The National Labor Relations Act, where we've seen some activity recently, has, through the Taft-Hartley amendments, been obliged to provide the so-called common law factors, which are enumerated in the restatement of agency.
And so the board draws its test from these common law factors. These are factors decided by the courts rather than by legislation. So they have that instruction to use a common law. But the board recently handed down a ruling in which it changed how it applies that common law test to figure out independent contractor.
Yes, the board, by a 3-1 vote, there are only four members on the board now, changed the test substantially. The board alluded to, relied upon, a Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia decision of about a decade ago involving Federal Express, in which the court found that entrepreneurial opportunity for the worker was really the animating consideration in determining whether one is an employee or an independent contractor.
Mm-hmm. And then the board made that notion about entrepreneurial opportunity sort of a central piece of its super shuttle decision that changed the test. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes, that's correct. The board really subordinated, at best, most of these criteria that I've just alluded to, which are essentially, although the past boards, including my own, in a number of key decisions that we rendered in the 90s, have emphasized the fact that all of the criteria must be looked at. But the criteria that I would say, criterion that really envelops the others, and to a much greater extent than the entrepreneurial opportunity, is that of control. Mm-hmm. So many of these criteria are related to control, which in turn is related to independence and autonomy, which appear in various places in the common law criteria.
And the board said in Super Shuttle that entrepreneurial opportunity is the sort of flip side of the control coin.
Yes, so, mm-hmm. yes, and that it was the animating consideration as the court of a court of appeals decision, which has now subsequently been contradicted by other courts of appeals decisions in the District of Columbia had held.
But there are some legislative options available for those independent contractors. You wrote an article in the current issue of the Missouri Law Review on independent contractor classification, and you looked at a few cases that affect that arena, and you say in the article that one of the cases, Chamber of Commerce versus Seattle, could provide a roadmap for states or municipalities who want to enact legislation that would give independent contractors collective bargaining rights. Could you talk about that case a little bit?
Sure. The city of Seattle, confronted with a desire by many of the drivers in ride-sharing companies to have collective bargaining, and by the denial of that right by companies like Uber and Lyft and others in this new, very fast-growing industry, decided that it would devise a collective bargaining law for these employees, on these workers, on the assumption that they were independent contractors. And I think it's quite, by the way, I might say parenthetically, that under the board's new test of, issued a month ago, it's quite clear that the board will regard those workers as independent contractors. And so Seattle created this legislation, and it was faced with two legal hurdles.
Right. The chamber, they brought an antitrust claim saying the law would let independent contractor drivers fix prices, and they also said it was preempted by federal law. What did the court end up saying?
The Ninth Circuit held that there was no antitrust exemption in the state of Washington, and that but that a state, as opposed to a municipality, could exempt conduct within state borders from antitrust law. And secondly, it held that the legislation of this kind was not preempted by the National Labor Relations Act, notwithstanding the Supreme Court's two key pro-preemption decisions through which machinists and garment, through which state legislation has been ousted. Court held that states can provide for collective bargaining for independent contractors. And I think that this decision provides a roadmap for state legislatures, perhaps here even the state legislature in California or other states which want to provide these new workers who are sometimes regarded as independent contractors protection.
Excellent, excellent. Well, that's something that we'll be keeping an eye on both in the courts and in the state legislatures. Thanks, Professor Gold, for joining us today.
Good to be with you, brother.
Thanks to everyone for listening to this week's edition of the Punching In podcast. For the latest labor and employment news, check out the weekly Punching In news column at news.bloomberglaw.com and click on the tab for Daily Labor Report. If you'd like to be added to the mailing list for the weekly news column in this podcast, contact Chris Opfer at copfer@bloomberglaw.com. You can also find me throughout the week on Twitter at Robert Iafola. Until next time.